so much. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next Wednesday, peace on earth.
Beat of Ray Lynch's Cloud Below Your Knees signals 8 p.m. Wednesday, and it's time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 Houston. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, and along with an ensemble of Class A hosts, Greg Audell, Drs. Warren Holloman and Mary Edgerton, and engineer and media maven Nicole Rocherlin, we celebrate the power of story by putting the spotlight on storytellers who take us on soulful journeys with moving narratives and excursions through traditional yarns to roads of astonishing enchantment. We've got a great program for you tonight. We're going to DeKalb, Illinois, to enjoy one of the most talented artists we've ever had the honor of having on So What's Your Story. But not until we retreat to 1949, when George Orwell wrote 1984. It was a warning of what it might be like to have a government spying on its people, combined with no protection from civil liberties and determined to edit historical records to only say what the government wants people to know. As we continue our summer fund drive, reflect on the power that fuels expression, unrestricted by corporate filters, because this is what it means to support listener-sponsored KPFT with its eclectic program inventory like no place else on the dial. 90.1 Houston, Pacifica Radio, is the cornerstone of our independent media landscape that depends on your support. This station has always been special, and this program is the ultimate emblem of community radio, live storytelling. People with astonishing stories to tell, the kind that connect us with the rhythm of the hearts that deliver them. I'm asking you to call right now at 81713-5. I'm thinking of my cell number. Don't call that. That's already tapped. Now it's 713-526-5738. And let one of our steadfast volunteers, actually Gregster is out there, taking your pledge. I'm going to thank you on the air unless you say otherwise. If you'd rather give your pledge online, go to kpft.org, then to donations. Tell us how you want to pay and then scroll to So What's Your Story as the program that you designate to receive your pledge. A generous $200 is going to get you some cool thank you gifts, a one-year membership to the Houston Storytellers Guild, our proud sponsor, or a guest co-spot on this program so you can be a star. 713-526-5738, jam KPFT, and don't think someone else will call because you know that's not the way it works. It's all about you. Now, actress, vocalist, and storyteller Marjorie Thomas is standing by in DeKalb, Illinois, waiting to rock your world just as she's done to so many for years. Thanks to her true jazz style, Marjorie is known for her convincing portrayal of Billie Holiday in concert and on stage. Her music career was sparked in St. Louis when she performed for the opening of Dizzy Gillespie's 70th birthday concert. She debuted in Unity Theater's Cotton Club Revue, delivering stunning performances as Bessie and Sadie Delaney for Having Our Say, Lady in Green for Colored Girls, and Billie Holiday, Lady Day at the Boston Bistro. And this is the incredibly short list. Her sultry voice can be heard in radio and TV spots, and you'll catch her in theaters, concert halls, and sharing the stage with jazz greats Bill Pierce, Rodney Whittaker, Randy Brecker, and a gifted pianist named Reggie Thomas, who happens to be married to Marjorie. She's conducted workshops at Berklee College of Music, International Association of Jazz Educators in Toronto, and Michigan State University, just to name a very few. And oh yeah, she's a storyteller, and a darn good one. Nicole brought a story to my attention that Marjorie posted on Facebook about her father, a story which redefines a daughter's love. Marjorie, are you around?
I am right here.
Oh, my God. Hello. It is so great to finally hear your voice over the phone. Actually, you sound you sound like you did on the other phone. You sound just much the same. I appreciate you being here. Hey, listen, before we get started, what TV spots do you do that we might recognize your voice?
I've done some things in the St. Louis area, so nothing nationwide that you might necessarily know, but just some things on the local level in St. Louis.
Great. Yeah. Very good. You know, you wrote to me telling me that barbed wire was invented in a cab. Is that true, or are you just kidding me?
Oh, no, that's so true. If you ever travel this way, I'll take you to the museum.
Yeah, you know, please, because there's one thing on my bucket list I never thought I'd ever have the opportunity to do, and that was to visit the Barbed Wire Museum in the northern part of Illinois. Thank you so much. In Michigan, excuse me. Marjorie, your bio was the most challenging one that I've ever had to construct. Was it all right that I touch upon?
Oh, yes.
Okay, all right. You are touted as having a true jazz style. Now, how would you describe that to someone unfamiliar with jazz?
Well, jazz can allow you to consciously move the melody line and to interact spontaneously with other musicians. And it has the chance to be new every time you perform it. And that's one of the things I love about it.
It really is fresh. You know, I don't know much about jazz, but I know it is such a fresh genre. Every time you hear it, it is different. It is very different.
Yes.
Nicole knew your father and grandmother.
Yes.
And she suggested that we get you on the show. And I thought it was a great idea, but I have to tell you, when she showed me the story that you composed about your father on Facebook on March 31st, I immediately thought this is an incredibly powerful narrative. So descriptive, so profound. Have you ever been told that you write so well? I know you've been told you sing beautifully. You're an actress, but have you been told?
I have heard people say that they enjoy reading what I write, and they don't want the story to end. So that makes me feel good.
That's a magnificent thing to say. Are you kidding? But, you know, when you write, it is so obvious that it needs to be spoken. You know, some stories are meant to be read only, but yours are really meant to be spoken. You revealed to me that although the songs that inspire you don't necessarily parallel the stories that you tell, the music sort of gives you a sort of a pulse, those are my words, on the beat of a story. And I'm going to ask Nicole to play a little bit of Matters of the Heart for just a few moments, and then I'm going to ask you to take a few seconds to describe how it connects to that beautiful story about your dad.
Okay.
Yeah. Nicole, please.
You say that you're okay, but you turn everyone and everything away. Is that a callus on your heart, right there over the broken part? Can't seem to get close to you at all, because around your life you've put up a wall. Is it there to keep me out, or keep you in? Sounds like
okay. Why this song before this story?
Our hearts connect us to each other. In families, friends, romantically, with God, with our neighbors. My heart was redesigned 15 years ago with a triple bypass surgery. My dad's heart was wounded by wars, but over time, it was healed by love, and that's what that song is about.
Wow. What a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful connection. Marjorie, tell us your story.
My father, Y.Z. Johnson Jr., was born on August 23rd, 1930, in St. Louis, Missouri. His family moved to East St. Louis, Illinois, where he graduated Lincoln Senior High School, June of 1948, and at the age of 17, immediately enlisted in the U.S. Army. At basic training camp, he was quickly promoted because it was noticed he was an early riser and showed himself to be responsible even at that young age. Shortly thereafter, he was sent to Berlin, Germany, where he learned to speak German fluently while he was strategically placed to integrate the then segregated U.S. Army. His character and determination were vital in the desegregation of the U.S. Army. When he returned to the U.S., he married my mother, Clara Nave Davis, and became an Army recruiter. Wisey's military career spanned more than 20 years, where he worked Army intelligence, traveling all over the world, even living in Thailand, Laos, and Cambodia, and served during the Korean War and 3 tours of duty in Vietnam. In the midst of being stationed all over the world, he would still make time for family. I recall as a 4-year-old in Red Bank, New Jersey, he would come in from working at Fort Monmouth in his green army fatigues and combat boots and teach me how to do the mashed potatoes and the twist. I didn't realize what a sacrifice it was for me to stand on the end of his boots to dance. He spent hours spit-shining them for inspection. He loved to dance and did so into his 80s with his great-grandchildren. When I was 7, he would take my sisters and me out on the Oklahoma prairie to show us things like Geronimo's jail cell, the roaming buffalo, and would teach us the names of the star constellations. We would go to late-night demolition derbies and take treks up Mount Scott. And when he was stationed in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, we didn't know that it was unusual to have prisoners packing our groceries at the commissary and cutting the grass, or that most children didn't stand at the cellar door with their fathers to witness what an oncoming tornado looks like. The same young man, 20 years later, after his original assignment in Germany, returned to West Germany, where he taught a young Colin Powell at an Army signal school in Lengries. Our family lived in Bavaria for 3 years, and during that time, he would, at a moment's notice, pile us into the VW van with a supply of kippers, crackers, and mustard, and drive us to the south of France on the Riviera. After crawling up a mountain to Hitler's eagle's nest and take a spin through Monaco, just for the heck of it, he thought it was important that we climb the Leaning Tower of Pisa because it was there. There were times when he would be upset, but he didn't fuss at me when he found out I was briefly detained and interrogated after accidentally getting off a tour bus at Checkpoint Charlie in East Berlin. He was stoic as I walked beside him at age 11 while we toured Dachau concentration camp, but explained how the terrible stench still lingered in the camps the first time he saw them as a young man on his first tour of duty. It was unsettling as a child to get off a plane in Frankfurt, Germany, and be dropped into a world where I couldn't understand the language. I soon learned that, just like at home in the United States, we found our father literally knew no strangers. His Bavarian friends loved him and addressed him reverently as Herr Oberbürgermeister, a title with the highest honor. Wisey loved to debate and sing, and from an early age was active in his high school award-winning choral group. Sometimes sitting at the kitchen table, he would yield his deep voice to an inspiring rendition of Edelweiss, or How Great Thou Art, while singing during military chapel services. He was one of the few parents who actually understood what was then called modern math. He knew so many things because he constantly investigated everything, taking the world apart and putting it back together again. He found ingenious ways to make everything from storage containers to intricate folding money. I called it Wisegami. What he didn't know, he imagined and created. He was a visionary, an engineer, that after retirement from the Army created everything from the original design for what we now know as the airport luggage conveyor belt to sophisticated furniture design. He was a problem solver and helper to many. He owned and operated successful businesses like a Boardwalk barbecue restaurant, was a designer and installer of early home security systems, and worked as a manager of the Army Class 6 stores in Europe. He also worked at the post office, and he secured the country's southern borders. He was a historian that investigated and manually cataloged his genealogy on index cards long before it was popular to do so, and could have taught Ancestor.com a few lessons. It didn't take an investigation for us to learn that he played on the porch of the Haley House in Hennings, Tennessee, with his cousin Alex. And before there was a film called Roots, they already knew there was a relationship to the ancestor, Chicken George. In his mid-50s, he started riding a motorcycle, venturing out on his Honda Silverwing. He could have made the commercial, "I'm going up the country, baby, don't you want to go?" It was while he lived in Texas that he test drove Sebring purple by beaches of the Gulf of Mexico. Up and down the same road. He was a prankster and a comedic joke, with a line by a fierce temper when crossed or treated unjustly. He would show up at the and complications from Agent Orange. His life. While they loved him, he enjoyed sophisticated equipment and art designs for anything he owned, like fast cars, motorcycles, posters, airplanes, and even to the end, complex beds, bathtubs, lounge chairs, and probably wanted to pop away in his wheelchair when he had his Aryan daughter. Right. Wisey enjoyed his and did a lot. If he loved someone or something, it was his mission to share the joy with everyone. If he liked a certain photo, he would blow it up real big. That's how he lived his life. It was impossible. It wasn't that he didn't have fear of anything. He lived, laughed, loved, traveled, and that sometimes you'd get. And we thank him. Not his and Eddie.
Marjorie, do you hear me? Yeah, we have a bad connection. But what? Can you hear me now? Yeah.
Perfectly.
Yeah. Okay. You know, that story, we missed a little bit of it, but not much at all. But I have to tell you, it was, I listened to, obviously, all the stories that guests share. And for the first time, I was totally... enraptured in such a way where I was oblivious to what was going on. I was thinking about my own family who were liberated from Sudhof concentration camp. I was thinking about sitting around our kitchen. You have no idea the many, many things that I was thinking about, just a mosaic of memories. An amazing story. And, you know, you were saying earlier that you love jazz, and pure jazz means that it's dynamic. It's always going. It's always changing. But, you know, stories do the same thing. Stories change constantly. And with that in mind, I wanted to ask you, what were you feeling as this story unfolded again in your mind? Because I know you've told it before, but this time, what were you thinking?
I told it again. Mm-hmm. I just relive all of the things that we did. Mm-hmm. I didn't know we had such a full life because it was the only life that I knew.
Right. Right, right.
But I just relived it, and even other people that grew up in the military didn't necessarily have the type of life that my sisters and I had. We did some of everything. My dad tried to expose us to everything.
You are listening to my guest storyteller, vocalist, and actress Marjorie Thomas on So What's Your Story? Only on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville. I'm your host, Hank Rubicek, with the essential Nicole Rocherlin at the controls. Nicole, you met Marjorie's father, is that right? Or you had Thanksgiving with her grandmother?
No, I've never met a grandmother, but... Okay. Her father, YZ, who always told me that the reason he had his name was because he had 13 brothers and sisters, and everyone had the two letters of the alphabet, and he was the last one, so that's why they named him YZ. And I always believed that story. And today I just learned that he's a junior.
He's a junior.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
But we used to spend every Thanksgiving together. He was very good friends with my mother and father, as well as my grandmother.
Beautiful. You know, if that really punctuates the reason, actually, if I could just talk nuts and bolts for a moment, it really punctuates the importance of the fun drive because, you know, people like Marjorie and the guests that we have on here share human stories like no others, and they're so astonishingly natural. And the way that they unfold is something you're not going to hear anyplace else. If you don't know us, we started in early 2008 as an open journal, bringing stories to you the fourth Friday of the month. And then you said, you know what, Hank? We want this every week. I love that idea. So we went to Mondays at 6 a.m. to Thursdays at 10 p.m. to this coveted spot on Wednesdays from 8 to 9, complete with a team of hosts that rival NPR, maybe even better. Because you don't tune in and think, what a lousy show. But what do you expect from programmers who aren't paid? You get the best we can muster because it's the best that you expect. But we can't keep it up without your support. So give us a call right now at 713-526-5738 or go to kpft.org, donations, and then scroll to So What's Your Story to preserve the power of story in a world desperate for the sentiments that inspire them. Everybody stay with us. We're doing one great show tonight, remote, and sometimes there's a little bit of an audibility problem, but we're going to get Marjorie back on in just a moment. In the meantime, Greg, what is happening out there? Can you share a few thoughts with us?
I can. You know, first and foremost, you know, I want to thank Hank, Dr. Hank, for bringing me on as a co-host of So What's Your Story almost 2 years ago. It has been the single most joyous, fascinating learning experience and professional experience I have ever had. And while it is absolutely Dr. Hank who I have to thank, I also want to thank you, our listeners, who support us and allow us, you know, to come to you each and every week with some of the best storytellers in Houston, Texas. If you want to support this program, you can call in 713-526-5738. We have a wide variety of premiums, but there's no premium like knowing that you are a part of keeping KPFT right here on 90.1, exactly where we've been for 47 years. And, Hank, how long have you been doing this program?
Well, first of all, I love you for saying that. That was such a beautiful sentiment. It really was. And I've been doing this, mid-2007 I got active. So it's been a little over 10 years, and I love every second of it. But I am so grateful, Greg, for you and the rest of the team. You guys are friends, and you're real pros. And everybody, give them a call. 713-526-5738. Don't let them sit out there alone.
You know, and it's easy to think that a storytelling program has no cost associated with it. But trust me, it costs $150 an hour to keep us on the air. And that's every hour of every day, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day.
Right. You are right. Marjorie, we think we got you back. A Fade to Blue, another beautiful piece with, I think, a conspicuous segue into a story that you entitled Fade to Blue. Tell us about the song. Tell us about the
story. Fade to Blue shares the process of creating, how we create music and how we as artists are inspired and we touch other people's lives. I'm reminded that what we experience and recall as adults is oftentimes different from what children experience.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Nicole, play a little bit of this, please. Very different. Very, very unique. Tell us the story that follows this, Marjorie.
Colors are alive, always moving and changing, fading in the sun, or vibrantly bursting into being. They can appear to be intensified by the light of day, or faded into the shadows of night. From time to time, my husband Reggie and I performed together. He called me one day and said we needed another song for the recording that we were working on. I started fooling around with some ideas for a story and wrote the lyrics to the song Fade to Blue, and Reggie wrote the music. I've always loved the mystical sound of fade to whatever, black, gray, blue. And from my mother's extraordinary organizational skills as a child, I was assigned the color blue for my blankets, toothbrushes, towels, any personal item of mine that could be a color. It was blue. I don't remember if the original choice of blue was mine or my mother's. She diligently studied and implemented her knowledge of interior design gained from correspondence courses. This is one of the many things she participated in as she traveled over the globe as a military wife. However, the choice came to be, I've grown to love the color blue. My sister Sandra was assigned yellow. Deborah's color was green, which really complemented her hazel eyes. You get the idea. I'm only sharing this because I've always been curious about how and why an artist names a particular work, whatever it is named. I always want to know what's on their mind. I've come to learn that an artist may be inspired by one particular idea, but it is each individual listener or observer who brings his or her experience to the work to gain a particular impression. And that's why Van Gogh's paintings and B.B. King's recordings touch us all differently. The main point of art is that it touches us. My father attended one of our concerts where we performed the title track From Fade to Blue. Of all the music we performed that evening, he focused in on the lyric from the final verse of that song. When I was a little girl, I sat on the porch outside. My daddy promised to come take me for a ride. Little girls always believe what their daddy says is true. Don't break another little heart. Daddy, do what you say you're gonna do. In the end, if daddy doesn't come through, a little girl's heart fades to blue. My father became emotional and was moved by the song, thinking the storyline was about times when he couldn't be with us because he was deployed on the other side of the world, or sometimes he would be working on the military base right down the street from where we lived. He immediately went on to tell the story of when I was 8 and we lived on base at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. My father worked right down the street at Midwest Relay, but because he worked in intelligence, he wasn't allowed to come home for the next few days after President Kennedy was assassinated. As a third grader, I had a totally different experience from that event. I recall that day as I sat in Miss Ball's third grade classroom watching the teachers as they whispered in the hallway and became emotional, having a sense of something being terribly wrong. I remember thinking how odd it was for them to gather like that. It was especially odd for me because my greatest concern at that time was mastering the multiplication table so that I could be free to climb my favorite tree. I had no idea my world, the world, was about to be drastically changed, and I didn't know that there would be nothing but scenes of somberness on the black and white TV set. The greatest devastation in my 8-year-old world was that there would be no cartoon. There should always be cartoons in a child's world, but it seemed like the gray and black images on TV faded away from reality while men spoke only in hushed tone. That's all I remember. Children are uncomplicated beings. Yes, they want their parents to love them, and they want to run and jump and play, but they don't want their little world to fade into a place where there are no laughs and no cartoons. I tried to tell my father the song wasn't based on him causing a childhood heartbreak. He didn't believe me. So I just told him I was okay and allowed it all to fade to blue.
What a beautiful story. What a genuinely beautiful story. You know,
thank you.
So colors are alive and art makes you feel. What do you want us to touch about this story? What do we walk away with this story, Marjorie?
And this story, I want people to remember that sometimes as a parent, you have to forgive yourself. You do the best that you can do, and it's not always the way it should be, but you do the best you can, and sometimes you just have to, forgive yourself and move on.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, my wife is really a brilliant musician. She plays a flutist for the Houston Ballet Orchestra, and my brother is a jazz musician in L.A. And, you know, because of the two of them, I've learned about the feeling that music brings more than I ever thought possible. I know that sounds really vague, but you know what I mean. It's the kind of thing that we feel that can't really be described. And I want to talk about music and it being sort of an ignition key for other arts in just a little while, because jazz, in fact, is, as you had pointed out just a moment ago. But right now, I want everybody to know that you are enjoying my guest storyteller, vocalist Marjorie Thomas, on So What's Your Story, only on KPFT 90.1 Houston Pacific Radio for Peace. I am constantly amazed, Nicole, by the role storytelling plays in this city, and I'm sure you are too. So why don't you let us know about the wonderful world of Houston storytelling?
Well, our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, lead the way with their monthly story swaps the fourth Tuesday of every month at Temple Emmanuel, located 1500 Sunset. Go to their website, www.houstonstorytellers.org, for upcoming events and all our past So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008 listed on the menu under radio program. And hey, all of our listeners can tell us what they think or suggest program ideas by visiting our So What's Your Story Facebook page, and we promise to get back to you. Please be sure to share our page with your friends, families, loved ones, coworkers, enemies too. And we love it if you like us when you leave.
You know, maybe it'll make your enemies better people if they learn to appreciate So What's Your Story.
Yes, okay, yes. Greg from the Peanut Gallery. Give him a call, please, at 713-526-5738. Greg will even tell you a story, but for God's sakes, give him a call.
For a contribution, I'll tell you a story.
I know. Well, there you go. Well said, both of you.
Well,
all right?
don't forget, we have to check out our program clips on our YouTube channel, too.
You bet.
And don't miss our buddies at the Moth at Warehouse Live the second Tuesday of the month. They are one of the top storytelling spots in town.
They are indeed. Well said, both of you guys. Everyone can catch us on Facebook Live or listen to us online, so you can be reminded of our untiring commitment to bringing you the best live storytelling in Houston. We're the original, right here on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, listener sponsored and freedom fueled. 713-526-5738. Jam KPFT for your pledges and for the great thank you gifts that your generous $200 will yield. Nicole, remind us what that is.
Well, $200 will get you a blind date with Greg Aldell.
Excuse me?
Just
do I get to approve of this?
No.
I'll tell you what. For $1,000, I'll do it.
Yeah, Greg will do that for $10.
For $10, yeah. Yes. But
the truth comes out.
Seriously, guys, a $200 gift will buy. Well, a $200 pledge will buy a guest spot on our show or a year's membership to the Guild.
That's right. Very, very good. Because you don't want to tune in and hear. That's right, silence. That's right. You don't want to do that. Come on by 419 Lovett if you can find a parking space. And even Nicole will tell you a story. She knows one or two. Marjorie, your husband, Reggie, is also the real deal. You write the lyrics and he writes the music, and his resume requires a full weekend to process, too. But he's an extraordinary artist, currently serving as coordinator of jazz studies at Northern Illinois University after 3 years as professor of jazz piano in Michigan State and 20 years as professor of music at Southern Illinois at Edwardsville. Is he around?
He was, but Elvis has left the building.
Oh, my gosh. My gosh. Tell us about him. In 30 seconds, give us a great, great rendition of Reggie's life.
Reggie is probably one of the most amazing performing jazz artists and educators that you will ever come in contact with. That's all I have to say. That's my story. I'm sticking
to
it.
Well, and Nicole, you're my witness. We want to get Reggie on one of these days. We really do. This is not good that he is not here. It's not fair. It's just
we'll
not
do.
Fair.
We'll do. We'll do.
Your next story, Marjorie, Free to Move About the Cabin, is about the inextricable link that we have with each other, which really seems to be sort of a running theme with many of your stories and your music. But first, the seemingly unconnected song to the story, Three kids. Tell us about the musical connection to your story.
Reggie wrote, who just came back into the room, Reggie wrote.
Oh, how convenient.
Three kids. Yeah, he wrote Three Kids.
Reggie, we know you're there. Hello, you're on live. You are all across the world. This is being broadcast everywhere from here to Southeast Asia. Just wanted you to know that. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. And okay, he's right good. Here.
All right. We'll get him later.
This story is about a serviceman's concern for his three kids. Mm-hmm.
A little bit, Nicole. Let's play it. Dynamic. Let's hear the story.
One day, I received a call from a production company telling me about a show, Menopause the Musical, and I agreed to go for an audition that same day. At the audition, I was told there was some dance movement. I didn't feel that it was a great fit, but it was an opportunity for me to receive my sought-after equity card. Part of the contract involved traveling to Seattle to preview Bat City's cast performing this show. We flew in one evening, went to the performance, hung out with the cast half the night, and were up about 5 a.m. for a flight back home. My mind was a whirlwind. The intricately choreographed dance numbers, quick costume changes, and voice harmonies had me wondering if I had bit off more than I could chew. I either fortunately or unfortunately was raised to think that nothing is impossible, but the whole production weighed heavy on my mind and my body. Traveling back to St. Louis on this early morning flight, and after such a long day and late night, I was exhausted. The plane had very few people on it, so I opted to move to a row where no one was sitting, thinking, I'll stretch out and get some sleep. Well, someone joined me on that row, so I promptly moved to the back where there was another empty row. I buckled up for takeoff and leaned my weary head against the window in preparation to pass out. When a young man boarded, he passed a multitude of empty seats and plopped down right next to me. I couldn't believe it. All of these empty seats, and this guy sits next to me. He was wearing army fatigues, and as he sat, he let out a deep sigh. My tired eyes were rolling around in my head. I just knew I would pass out. He started talking and asked me where I was going. I replied, I'm headed home to St. Louis. He told me he had come from Hawaii, where he was stationed, and was going to his father's funeral in St. Louis. He was then going to be deployed to Iraq for the third time. I was thinking, that's heavy. Of course, I gave him my condolences on the loss of his dad and thanked him for his service to our country. I never expected what happened next. An emotional dam opened up as he told me how horrible it was in Iraq and how hopeless he felt. He shared a detailed account of how a suicide bomber came in his camp during a regular morning military strategy meeting and killed a great number of people. My eyes were wide open now. This wasn't just the war I heard about on TV. It was up close and personal. This young man went on to tell me that he knew war was horrendous, but his most difficult struggle was leaving his family behind. He worried about his three children moving around so much and not having him there to protect and see about them. He was worried that they wouldn't make the adjustments that had been forced on their lives. It was then that I told him I was an Army brat, and I survived 6 different elementary schools, 2 middle schools, and 3 high schools. I don't have a hometown per se, but I don't know many strangers. I explained to him that the way my sisters and I survived the moves was to lean on each other. You have people you know, and then you can fight with them and make up with them, and together you conquer the new world. When we were relocated to a new base, we had each other as friends until the time that we would meet new people. In the military, everybody is constantly moving, and that was my norm. I didn't know any other way. We talked for the entire flight as my fellow actors slept comfortably in their individual seats. Sure, I was tired, but being on that flight at that time gave me a chance to encourage someone. Sometimes we're focused on the wrong thing, and we're not leaving the door open for what is really important. He needed to know that his children would be okay. For the time that I worked on menopause, I met some wonderfully talented people. I learned how to be a quick change artist, and I learned that I should always try and not let fear shut me down. We are not in this world alone. Sometimes the pilot informs you you are free to move about the cabin. Then other times we need to sit buckled in our seats and listen with an open heart.
I love the endings to your story. You signal an ending, but, you know, it's not like you drop a bomb and run for cover. There's more to it. You know what I'm saying? What do you think? What was it about you that made it possible for these young men to tell you a story?
I don't know. Unless I have written across my forehead, I will listen. I don't know. I really don't know. I almost feel that maybe God just put me there at that time.
Well, you know, whatever it is, we ought to bottle it and sell it, because, you know, the whole idea of this show, really, and this is a natural segue, it's about how we plug into people without plugging in, right? And the idea is that the way that we take people on journeys and the way we connect with them is almost mysterious, but it's not. It's just about looking at them. It's about taking the time. It's about not interrupting. It's about telling them, you know what? I really care about what you have to say. When I teach storytelling, it's amazing, because it's the only class where, when class is about to end, no students grab their books telling me, hey, it's time to go. You know what I'm saying? They sit there.
Yeah.
They sit there and they listen to each other. And it's really an amazing sight. It is. Look, I don't know much about jazz, but everyone should know that jazz has an iconic standing in American artistry and culture. And this is the educator part of me, but, you know, I do mean artistry, beginning as a fusion of ragtime and blues, free-flowing, and then surfacing early in American movies like The Jazz Singer and Strike Up the Band, and ultimately becoming a model for Gershwin and Copland, and influencing poets like Carl Sandburg and Langston Hughes, and painters Jackson Pollock and Archibald Motley. Jag ignited a medley, no pun intended, but I guess I did, of invention. And I don't know, is that fair? Is that a pretty good assessment, Marjorie? Because it really is.
Oh, sure.
It's a mosaic of art. I don't think it's overstating it when I say that Billie Holiday was your unconditional idol, right?
So true.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you portrayed her in concert and on stage, and although it's impossible to answer this question in just a few moments, why Billie?
Billie changed vocal music. She brought to focus the vocalist during the big band era. Before that, there were the horns that were focused on, and they were featured. But Billie told a story in her song, with her voice, with her emotion. She recreated melodies, and she made the songs her own, and people were able to connect to
them. Yeah, so well said. What we experience in life really often depends on where we're positioned, is the message of your final story, View from the Front Row. And the song to frame it is Will-O-The-Wisp. Nicole, give us a little taste of this tune. What I expected, but these are so incredibly different. Unbelievable. Look forward to the story.
What and how we experience life oftentimes depends on where we're positioned. At a theater production, one of my favorite places to be is center stage in front of a warm, receptive audience. And I've even had some memorable moments standing in the wings watching my husband perform. The bottom line is, I want a close-up view. I love the front row. Until 2 weeks ago, on June 13th, at Arlington National Cemetery, I sat on the front row in the second seat next to my stepmother. It was a hot, sunny, 95-degree day, and while we sat there with family and friends under the canopy, I looked out over what seemed like never-ending graves. I took in the view of this sacred cemetery of over 600 acres that was covered by grave markers lined up like huge, perfect, spotless dominoes. Over 400,000 graves representing souls of people who gave their lives for this country. On this day, I experienced quite a different view. I don't ever recall being on this front row. Many times I stood by while other families were on the front row, and with compassion, I tried to support them in their hour of need. You see, I'm a trained and licensed funeral director. I majored in mortuary science in college and worked as a mortician for many years before my singing and acting career came to be. It's quirky when I think of how my father tried to steer me into electrical engineering in high school, but told me many years later that he always wanted to be a funeral director. Jack, I was trying to do something different. Some years ago, I worked at Officer Funeral Home, a prominent establishment for nearly 100 years in existence in the city of East St. Louis, where my father grew up. After living all over the country and Europe, I landed back in the same area where my parents were raised. Years later, after my father retired from the military and numerous other professions, he returned to East St. Louis and worked with me at Officer Funeral Home as a chauffeur and driver. He loved talking to people, and from his boyhood, he knew so many of their families' histories. I remember some years ago being told, "You don't know what loss is like until you sit on the front row." It's true. Years ago, my father and I worked a service together at Jefferson Barracks National Cemetery, and he would tell me he wanted a military burial at Arlington. I would listen to him and respectfully note it in my head, but it was my heart that would have a hard time processing the possibility and the probability. It would make me a bit sad, even back then, because I knew if I lived long enough, that day would come. But it was like a mirage in my mind. About a year ago, when I visited my dad in Texas, I sat listening to the doctor give a grim diagnosis of a fast-growing cancer. My father told me he was at the front of the line talking to God, and God told him to get to the back. I expect that's the way God would talk to Wisely Johnson. He had a view of what it would be like, but it wasn't his time yet. He received a great number of medals and honors, including the Bronze Star. But my father never talked about his medals and honors, and he never spoke about the amount of pain he suffered during his last year. He had been on the front row in war, and on the front row before God. As my father's flag was folded and the seven guns shot off three rounds of ammunition for his final salutation, and as taps played in the background as if orchestrated, an airplane soared across the sky. I didn't want to be on the front row now. But sitting in that seat, I could see clearly. It was really true. He was gone. He had moved on from all the pain and suffering and was free to soar forevermore.
Mm. What a poetic story. Greg, you got to be out there. And now, Greg, did you prefer Gregster or Gregoroni?
Well, it's funny. Yeah. To my family, it is Gregor, to a couple of select others. But pretty much anything, as long as it's not one of the seven words you can't say on radio, then I am fine with it.
Well, that was my next.
And I am completely charmed by your guest this evening.
Thank you. I know that. And I know that. I know that. I know that. And I want you to chime in because it is so difficult to explain to people how programs like this touch us. I mean, that sounds so unprofound, but it's true. Nicole, right? It's amazing.
Hey, can I say something else about Nicole? Nicole came to us as an inexperienced intern, and she has taken the radio hosting comedy world by storm. And it has been such a joy to watch Nicole just blossom and become someone we can depend on each and every week on. Yeah. So What's Your Story? But also, that's the thing about community radio. People don't understand when we say you can come in these doors and volunteer, and you may end up working on a radio show, you may end up hosting a show, or just like our general manager, Obadike Camus, you may end up being general manager of a station. That is what community radio is.
Sure is.
And if you want to be part of our community, you can call 713-526-5738. Talk to Ted, who's sitting here eager to take your contribution. And, yeah, if you'd like, we may even tell you a story when you call in. So please, right now in the next 9 minutes, call 713-526-5738. Now, if you're listening to this at a later time or on the archive or the Houston Storytellers Guild website, you can go online to contribute to So What's Your Story. Just go to kpft.org, and when it asks the program you want to support, of course it is So What's Your Story.
You bet. Thank you, Greg, so very, very much. Ted, how you doing? How you doing? I'm glad you're out there, too. Listen, Nicole, who do we have to thank?
We have to thank Tamia's Touch of Care. She's a licensed massage
beautiful.
Therapist.
Thank you so much, Tamia. That is so beautiful. Thank you so much, Tamia. Keep those calls coming in. 713-526-5738. Marjorie, who was the storyteller in your house growing up? Sounds like your dad, but I don't want to have to jump the gun here.
Yeah, my dad, yeah, my mom, sure. When we visited my grandparents. And the thing is, I would always listen. I listened to everyone, and I recall the things that they said. And you're right. We need listeners. You need listeners for the story.
Yeah, you sure do. You know, we spend so much time talking, and I always talk about this with my students, that one of the reasons we are collectively less than stellar communicators is because we're told at a very young age, if you want to be successful, talk. Raise your hand, say something, you know? So we say things, and then we go home, and our mothers and fathers say, oh, I see you have a little star on your forehead. What did you say? Well, I don't know, but I was rewarded for it, so I'm going to keep on talking, right? We just don't reward people for sensing and interpreting and responding to stimuli and just sitting there and not saying anything. What were some of your favorite stories?
One of my grandmother's stories about her mother, who was a slave, and I sat in the room with her, and she didn't talk much. She was over 100, but I remember I was a small child, and my great-grandmother didn't talk about it, but her daughter, my grandmother, did. She told me how her mother was badly burned by the master's daughter, who was my great-grandmother's sister. She was burned at the fireplace because of jealousy.
Yeah.
That affected me from a very early age, to think that that's something that we experienced in our country. So I've always had a close connection to that. Yeah. I remember that story vividly.
Oh, that's a beautiful story. My great-grandfather lived to be 104, and he got married when he was 96. And I remember my grandmother, right? My grandmother says, Pa, you know, you just met the woman. Why don't you wait? And he says, what am I waiting for? I'm 96. I don't know. It's just for some reason that just struck me. Nicole, that's good. You're going to use that, aren't you? It's next time you're intoxicated, you're going to tell that joke to somebody, aren't
Absolutely.
You? Okay. Have you got any shout-outs for us, Marjorie?
I want to say, of course, hello.
Have you got the entire state of Illinois out there, the Fighting Illini? Are they all going to
I want to say hello to my grandchildren, all of them. And I want to say happy birthday to my friend Janet Taylor. Today's her birthday. And moving around the military,
happy birthday,
you don't have
Janet.
Any children.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, that's what I'd like to shout out.
Beautiful. Tell us about where you're headed now. What kind of gigs have you got coming up, you or Reggie?
Oh, we're both in Bloomington, Illinois this Friday at Jazz Up Front.
Okay.
We have the Glen Ellen Jazz Festival on July 15th. And in August, we're at Three Lakes and Birch Creek in Wisconsin. And we performed the stage play, both of us, Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill in Evanston, Illinois, outside of Chicago. September 1st, we're at the Chicago Jazz Festival. And then a brief tour in Australia in November.
Wow. Fantastic. Be safe and congratulations. What's your website? Tell us where we can reach you, where we can read all about you. And Nicole's already done this, but we want to get you back online. We want to get you on our Facebook photographs and all. But tell us about your website.
It's www.mrtjazz.com. Mr. T. Jazz.
Nicole's going to get that on our Facebook. Thank you so, so, so much. Next week, Dr. Mary Edgerton's going to be here. She's working on a couple of guests right now during this Fun Drive week. We never know who we're going to have on, but she's going to be here. You don't want to miss it. We're coming to the end of another edition of So What's Your Story? And again, we learned how stories show us the wisdom to gently open the windows so others will allow us to enter and respect the human magic that feed our spirits and touch our lives. Thank you, Marjorie Thomas, for taking us on an artistic voyage through words, musical notes, and gestures. And I'm sure that you'll agree that this is the best radio show you've ever been on, right?
Oh, I've had a ball. Yes, it is.
Thank you so much for saying that. We've had a ball having you on. And, you know, you really prove what Pablo Casals meant when he referred to music as the divine way to tell beautiful, poetic things to the heart. And this is what you've done for us all night. This is what we're going to do for you. We understand that your favorite Billie Holiday song is God Bless the Child, right? Or at least one of them. And we're going to start playing that right now as we do this outro. You've been great. Thank you so much. And goodbye to Reggie, even though we didn't hear his voice. Storytelling, raw and real, and originating right here on So What's Your Story. It's your program to support. So although we're almost out of time, it only takes 90.1 seconds to call 713-526-5738 or to go to kpft.org to tell us to continue to bring storytelling to your lives. Don't you dare go away, because Brian and Jason are next with To Tell the World. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. You keep loving great stories, and we're going to keep bringing them right to you, because our So What's Your Story team will forever be reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. And you're going to listen to this beautiful tune for another minute. In the meantime, stay safe. We love you. And peace.
Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own. That's got his own. Lots of friends, they're crowding round your door. But when you're gone and spending ends, they don't come no more. Rich relations give, crust of bread and such, you can help yourself, but don't take too much. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own. Lots of friends, they're crowding round your door. But when you're gone and spending, thank you.
Mm-hmm.